Both. We are in Yechezkel, an abridged shir tonight. We are in Perek Mem Hei, which is chapter 45, and we are up to Pasuk Yud Dalet, which is verse 14. Okay, so we're still in the middle of the of Yechezkel standardizing the weights and measures and currency, etc. So he writes, V'chok HaShemen, and the law of oil, Habas HaShemen, a bas of oil, which is a measurement, it's a volume of oil. Masar Habas min hakor. You should take a tenth, is a tenth from a kor. Meaning, what you have to take off Miser, so you take off a tenth, so the way you take off a tenth of a kor is by taking a bas. And then it makes it a little clearer. Aseres habatim chomer, 10 batim is a chomer. A chomer is the same as a kor. So if a bas is a tenth of a kor, then obviously 10 batim equals a kor, which is a chomer. Ki aseres habatim chomer, 4, 10 batim is a chomer. So the pasuk here is somewhat redundant, emphasizing the fact that a bas is one tenth of a kor or one tenth of a chomer, same thing. Mm-hmm. The Gemara uses this pasuk to tell us what is a chomer, what is a bas. The kor was a well-known measurement; the other ones are not so well-known. So the redundancies here are to teach us various details or nuances in defining what these things are. Even so, even after having studied the Gemara, I can't tell you what each additional phrase teaches us. I was hoping to be able to do that, but I don't have a good answer for that. Clearly, each additional phrase is meant to teach us something new, but I can't pinpoint exactly what it is. But the overall message is that the measurement called a bas is one-tenth of the measurement called a chomer or a kor. And that would be taken. That would be the meiser of oil. Tes vav 15. V'se'achas min hatzon. Now the literal meaning this the way to literally translate this is, and one sheep from the flock, min amasayim from 200, mimashke Yisrael from the mashke means a drink or a liquid of Yisrael. Lemincha ulaola ulishlamim for velishlamim for a mincha, a meal offering, an ola, a totally burnt offering, and a shlamim, which is a peace offering, lechaper aleim to atone for them. Neum Hashem Elokim, says Hashem God. So even though that would be the simple reading, but Chazal, our sages, break this pasuk up to tell us several things. First of all, v'se'achas min hatzon, the word achas, which could mean one sheep, can also mean a singular sheep, meaning that what we, for instance, we find, we had this in Chumash, in the creation class, when we learned Parshas Toldos. So over there, when Avimelech took Rivka, or excuse me, where Yitzchak said that Rivka was his sister, not his wife, and then Avimelech found out that she was really his wife, he had not taken Rivka, but he called Yitzchak and he said to him, why did you tell me she's your sister and not your wife? He says, Kimat shachav achad ha'amas ishtecha. The one, the simple meaning is that it almost happened that one of the people of the nation molested your wife. That's the simple reading. But Rashi says there, in the name of Chazal, that it's a singular one of the nation almost molested your wife, meaning me, the king. Mm-hmm. The singular one, the most important one, almost took your wife. So here as well, when it says v'se'achas, it doesn't mean one sheep, it means the singular of the sheep, the best of the sheep. That when you bring a karbon, when you bring a sacrifice, an offer, you bring the best, the choicest of your flock. We know that in Parshas Bereishis, when Cain and Hevel have their dispute, Cain brings mi becharos son. Excuse me, he brings mi becharos son mechalahin is Hevel. Cain brings He brings, Rashi says he brought the not the best. He just brought anything he had.
Random.
That's right. He didn't take the best. But Hevel took the best of his flock as a carbon to Hashem. Now, this is meant to whet your appetite that Rabbi Freundlich will be speaking about this on Shavuos night. So even though I don't necessarily encourage women to come on Shavuos night, because why should you stay up if you don't have to stay up?
Yeah.
the chiyuv of Talmud Torah is on men, so why should you do that? But there's nothing wrong with doing it, and I know this is what his topic is on Shavuos night, and I know it's very, very interesting. He's going to be speaking about Kain and Hevel all night. At any rate, so there you have the same idea Kain didn't bring the best of what he was bringing. Hevel brought the best of what he was bringing. Hevel's carbon was accepted, Kain's was not. So that's the first part of the pasuk. When it says Mina Masayim from the 200, Mimashke Yisrael, so Mina Masayim tells us something completely new. Mina Masayim tells us that we know that there are various types of things that are prohibited, that we're not allowed to eat. Obviously there's non-kosher food, there's milk and meat, and then there are other things that we can't eat. A regular Jew who's not a Kohen cannot eat truma, for example. We can't eat arla being the first 3 years that a fruit tree grows. You can't eat the fruit. There's kilei hakerem, which is items that become mixed or grafted with grapes. These items are also prohibited for us to eat. Now, typically we know that if a non-kosher item gets mixed up with a kosher item. So what's the number? What's the magic number?
160.
Okay, 160th. If it's 1 in 60, the proportion of 1 to 60, then we're allowed to eat the food because the non-kosher item is batal, it's null and void in what it fell into. Classic example is a person that a few drops of milk fall into a large pot of soup, of chicken soup. So it's batal, and the chicken soup is 100% permitted to be eaten. It's 1 in 60. And that's usually the case. Now, the reason why it's 1 in 60 is because the main thing we're interested in is that one cannot taste the offending matter. That the taste, should be batal, should be null and void. And Chazal tell us that what's the ratio where the taste is so diluted that it can no longer be sensed? That would be 1 in 60, typically. Unless it's a type of thing which is avidi lataima, which means something which is meant to give a strong taste. Some spices are so powerful that they exceed the 60 limit. But typically, 1 in 60 is what it's going to be. That's for normal offending matter, like not kosher food, even milk and meat, things like that. But there are certain types of things where the Torah tells us a greater level that is needed in order to make them null and void. So those items would be arla, the first 3 years of the fruit tree, and kilei hakerem, and the mixture with grapes. Those things are asr bahana. They are not only you're not allowed to eat them, they're even prohibited to get any benefit from them. You can't give them as a gift, for example, to your non-Jewish neighbor, because you can't get any benefit from it. You can't feed it to your pet, to your dog, to your whatever it is.
I used to have that problem with my dog.
The what?
You know, like they would have like meat and cheese flavor.
Right, that's a problem with pet
dog food.
Right, that is a problem with pet food. Typically, it is a problem. So these two items, arla and kilei hakerem, are more stringent when it comes to being mevatel them, when it comes to making them null and void. So if one of them falls into something else, you would need 1 in 200, not 1 in 60. That would be the ratio. And that's what we learn from this Min HaMasayim, 1 in 200, Mimashke Yisrael. What is Mashke Yisrael? The liquids, the drinks of Jews. What does that mean? What distinguishes a drink of a Jew from a drink of anybody else? What distinguishes it is that we only drink that which is kosher. What is being said over here is that whatever we're going to bring to the Beis HaMikdash must be kosher. you can't bring a non-kosher item to the Beis HaMikdash. Right. So that if you're bringing flour, for example, it has to be kosher flour. It can't be flour that, for instance, grew with the grapes, making it non-kosher flour. It can't be, if you're bringing wine for the nesachim, for the libations, you can't use non-kosher wine. You have to use kosher wine. So you can't use wine, of course, that was used for avodah zarah, for idolatry, but you also can't use wine that comes from grapes that grew in a way that they weren't supposed to be grown. You can't use grapes in the first 3 years for the wine that you bring on the that you bring on the mizbeach. And that's true for animals as well. The animals that are brought are only kosher animals, as we know. Only only cows and sheep and goats are brought as karbanos on the mizbeach, and they have to be kosher. They can't be trefos. They have to be kosher animals. So this is all derived from here, from this pasuk. It's cryptic in the pasuk, but that is what it's coming to teach us, that it must be kosher, and that when it comes to these most offending matters, then you need 1 in 200 to be mevatel in order to make them null and void. With Torah Day School's community garden, that is proudly displayed. So when they began the community garden, I sent an email to those who were running it I asked my children when they came home from school after they had planted, I asked them how was it done. So they said, well, you know, we planted so I said, well, what did you plant? You know, each child, I asked them, they said, well, did each one have a specific thing they were planting, each class? They said, no, we just threw seeds in. So were the seeds specific? I said, no, it was just all kinds of seeds mixed up together. So that's not a problem. That's not a problem outside of Eretz Yisrael. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, you can mix seeds. It's not a problem. You can have wheat and barley and oranges and roses, whatever. You can have it all mixed up. It's not a problem. Except grapes. Mm-hmm. Grapes is a big problem. Not only is grapes a big problem, but if you grow grapes in the wrong way, then not only are the grapes prohibited, but you might have, depending on the case, you might have to uproot a lot of the things that are growing around the grapes up to a certain distance, depending on how it was done, depending on how improper it was. So I sent an email to those who are running the community garden to please be very careful not to include any grapes. As long as they stay away from grapes, they're not going to have any issues. But once you include grapes, you got to know what you're doing. So the person in charge wrote me back that she appreciates it, and that this is the kind of thing that they would like the upper school to learn about, and to understand how to do it, which is a wonderful thing. But it's got to be done properly. You don't want to. It's taking chances. If you don't learn the halachas beforehand, when you plant grapes, you can really have big problems. And this is true for anybody in their backyards making any kind of garden. You want to grow anything, you have no problem outside of Eretz Yisrael. But if you want to grow grapes, make sure you consult with your LOR beforehand to make sure you do it right, not to end up with this problem of
LOR.
Local Orthodox LOR. Rabbi. To make sure you don't have this problem of Kilei HaKerem, of the mixture of grapes with other things. Yes?
So why grapes alone? Why is it okay?
So Torah says
wheat. Just because it's Torah.
What? Why is it okay to?
They try to make wheat. You know, what do you call it when you implant?
Grafting again. Yeah.
Why
yeah.
is grafting wheat or other things?
Well, the truth is that there are problems with that as well. But that is only in Israel. Outside of Israel, then only grapes. That's
outside of Israel, you cannot plant grapes.
You could plant grapes. You can't make. You have to make sure the grapes are separate from other things.
And in Israel too, or not?
In Israel, it's even more stringent. Yeah, that's right. And one word about bittul, about making something null and void, just because we're bringing it up over here, we should be aware of this. And I'm sure most everybody knows this, but we should reinforce it, that bittul, which is when something becomes null and void, it's only okay if it happens by accident. You're not allowed to deliberately try to mix something in that is not supposed to be there. So you can't deliberately put a few drops of milk in your soup, even though it's less than 1 in 60. But that no one would do, because why would you do it? If you can't taste it anyway, why would you add the milk in? But what when it does come up is, let's say that some milk fell in to my chicken soup, and it's only 1 in 30. Well, that makes the whole thing treif. It's all not kosher. I can't eat it anymore. But I have a great idea. I'll add in more chicken soup to make it 1 in 60. Yeah. And then it'll be okay. So that's no good. You can't do that.
Uh-huh.
If it happens by itself, it's okay. You can't deliberately do it. And if you do it deliberately, then the whole thing is treif. The whole thing remains treif. So you can't... What's that?
And your pot. And your...
Okay, well, the pot and the whole thing. That goes yeah. So you got to be careful not to do it deliberately. Now, there is an exception to this rule, which is important for us to be aware of. It's not that relevant to adults, but it is very relevant to children. And that is as follows. When it comes to medication, to taking medication, so when we take medicines, medicine does not need to be kosher if it is taken in a way which is not a typical way to eat. So if one swallows a pill, that's not the way one would normally eat. That's called shelo kederach achila. That's not the typical way to eat. The pill does not have to be kosher. It is better that it be kosher, but it does not have to be kosher. And that's why all year round, a person has to take medication, and it's in a pill form, then one does not need to check the kashrus of it, there are no kosher symbols on most medications, especially prescription. Over the counter, some do have a heksher, and it's better to use one with a heksher. But if it's a medication that's needed, even if it's not needed because of a life and death situation, it's needed because of whatever a mild condition a person has, even if it's congestion or allergies, you know, things of that nature, it is permitted to take a non-kosher medication. If a kosher medication is not readily available in the regular way, by swallowing a pill, and that's because it's shelo kederach achila. It's not in the typical way of eating. The problem comes up when medication is taken in the way one would normally eat, which means it's a sweet tasting medication. It's not bitter, and you drink it. That's when you get issues of kashrus, because that's the way one regularly eats, so, or drinks. So to take a sweet tasting medication or a chewable medication, that's when kashrus becomes an issue. Now, the chewable medications you can usually call a kashrus organization, which can give you an idea about whether the chewable medication is acceptable or not. Most of the time, they do have some information. There is the Star K in Baltimore has a hotline. If you don't have the number, you should take it down. 410-484-4110. And it's staffed 9 to 5 Monday through Thursday and 9 to 2, I think, on Fridays. And they answer questions, and it's a great resource to have. At any rate, a chewable medication, you can usually get some information about. With a liquid medication, which is many children's medications are liquid, and some adult medications are liquid, particularly cough medicines.
Yeah.
So there, the problem is that the agent that is used non-active ingredient that is found in almost all liquid medications produced in the United States is glycerin.
Yeah.
Now, glycerin has three ways that it's produced. It could be a vegetable source, it could be a mineral source, or it could be an animal source. Mm-hmm. If it's a vegetable or mineral source, we have no problem with kashrus. If it's an animal source, then it's treif. It's not kosher, you can't eat it. So the problem here is that it's produced in all three ways in the United States. Different factories produce it in different ways at different times. They can change in the middle. It is not documented. The FDA doesn't require documentation for how it was derived. And therefore, if you go to a company and say, well, which glycerin are you using? They have no idea. There's no way to follow it unless there would be a very extensive system of mashkichim in different places, and no one's ready to go and put that into place. So bottom line is, when you have a liquid medication, then there is no way to know whether that liquid medication has a glycerin base that is kosher or a glycerin base that's not kosher.
What about grape flavors?
Most of those flavors are not a problem. They're not. They are all artificial flavors. They're not real grape.
Yeah. You had talked about sweet tasting. So what if it tastes bitter?
If it's bitter,
but it's a liquid.
Yeah, if it's bitter, then it would not be considered regular eating. If you've got if you have to gag it down, then it's not regular eating. Then it wouldn't be an issue. Then it would be like taking a pill. Because you got to gag it down.
Well, even if you have to gag it, it's not sweet. It's not something you would.
It's not something you would normally
taste. That
yeah,
you would,
yeah. It's not a taste that people that not you in particular, but people typically find it offensive. Then it would not be a problem. Right.
What about glycerin tablets?
A tablet is not a problem because
you just drink it.
Right, because you're swallowing it. It's not typically, again, if you can get a kosher one, it's better, but
right.
it's not a problem because you're just swallowing it. It's not the way you normally eat. Yeah.
What about now the pharmacies advertising, I know it's really off the topic, that they're now making available flavorings for medication?
Yes, I'm not sure. So here, listen how this works first. So with the glycerin, so there, it's a suffix. It's a doubt. When you get that medication, you have no idea if it's kosher or not kosher. Mm-hmm. It might be, but it might not be. Now, the Star-K has determined that the most there could possibly be of glycerin in any medication is 20%. That's, even if it's not kosher, it's not more than 20% of the entire mixture. Sometimes it's less than that. But the most it would be in any liquid medication is 20%, which is 1/5. Now, 1/5 is not 1/60th, so you have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
However, when it comes to a doubt where you don't know if it's kosher or not, then you're allowed to make it 1/60 on purpose. That's why I brought this whole thing up. Where normally you're not allowed to do that, you can't add liquid to make it 1/60 if you know it's not kosher, but if you're not sure if it's kosher or not, then you are allowed to add. So just do the math. How much do you have to add to make it 1/60? It's already 1/5. So how do you make it 1/60? You add 12 times the amount. So if you're supposed to take a teaspoon of medicine, then you add 12 teaspoons of any liquid, water, soda, fruit juice, whatever you want, milk,
Honey, is honey a liquid?
Anything it'll mix with it, if it'll mix. Honey, if it'll mix, but that's a lot of honey. 12 teaspoons of honey is a lot of honey. It's got to mix. It's got to mix in. So anything which will mix together with it, a liquid that'll mix in, you mix in 12 times the amount. Then, even if the glycerin wasn't kosher, it's now batel. Now it's null and void. And so that's permitted to be done. And that is what the Star-K recommends for children's medications when they have to take them and it's a liquid. This works for children who are no longer infants. When you're dealing with very, very young children, then you can't do that because they won't drink all that. It's too much to drink. But when you're dealing with already toddler age and on, offer them soda with their medicine, they'll take it. offer them grape juice with their medicine, they'll take it. So then it's usually not an issue. So that's why I bring it up over here. Of course, if there is a problem, one should always consult with their rabbi if it's an issue. For instance, when it comes to liquid, a liquid-based antibiotic, so it's not safe to not take it, and you got to make sure that the person takes what they're supposed to take, and they may have to take a lot of it. So one should be careful. One should not refrain from taking the medication. If they aren't able to do this, they should ask and see what else can be done. But this is the typical advice. This is the standard advice to give for liquid medications, particularly with children who need sweet tasting things because they're too young to be able to swallow a pill. I should mention two things. I should mention that I have spoken to the Star-K, and they say that all Tylenol and Motrin liquids are fine. That they have researched those. Mm-hmm. They don't print it in their lists. They don't print it in their lists. Because they don't have a mashgiach there. They know this from having done research, but they don't have a mashgiach, so they're not willing to print it. But if you call them and ask them, they'll tell you this. So that's very worthwhile to be aware of. That's you know, that's the standard medication for the kids. So that's good to know. That's one thing to be aware of.
It might also be reformulated now because it's been recalled. So one hit may have to check.
Okay. They said it, they would send out an alert if they found that it had changed. And the other thing to be aware of is that this is all when it comes to medication. When it comes to something which is not strictly a medication, like a vitamin, then one should consult with their rabbi, which means as follows. If a person is taking a vitamin because the doctor told them they're supposed to be taking that because they need it, because otherwise they will be unhealthy, then that's medication. There's no difference whether you call it a vitamin or call it a medication. If the doctor says you must have this more of this vitamin because your body needs it, that's a medication. But if a person is just taking a daily vitamin just because it's a good thing to do because it's healthy, so that's not a medication. And then one should consult with their rabbi whether that's okay to do, even though it's a pill that they're swallowing, whether it's okay to do without making sure that it's kosher. That one should check into. Most of the time I think when people take vitamins it's because their doctor told them to. There are people who are very health conscious and take vitamins just because it's a good thing to do. That's the category I'm talking about. Then they should consult with their rabbi if it's okay to take one without finding out whether it's kosher or not. Yeah.
So what about homeopathic remedies? You know,
so again, it's going to depend on whether a person is actually sick. Is it a medication or is it just for health? Just, you know, it promotes well-being and health. That's like a vitamin. And then one should find out about the kashrus of it. Even if it's for sickness, if it tastes good and it's like a drink, like a tea or something like that, then one should look into the kashers.
Well, homeopathic remedies are so diluted. You take a drop of something and then they mix it. And then they take a drop out of that mixture and they mix it. Then they take a drop out of that mixture and mix it.
So I'm not familiar with how it works. I'm not familiar with the system.
Homeopathic, yeah. And they're potent.
Yeah, so again,
substances.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. But I'm not familiar with how it works, so I can't really comment.
All-star game.
Huh?
All-star
game. Yeah. Okay, so that is the end of Pasuk Tesvav. That's the end of 15. Now, starting from Pasuk Tezayin, 16, is the Haftorah for Parshas HaChodesh. Before Pesach, Parshas HaChodesh, this is the Haftorah, and it goes for the balance of this parak and then the beginning of the next parak. So we're not going to finish it all tonight, but we'll begin it. The Pasuk says in Tezayin 16, Kol ha'am ha'aretz yu ela truma hazos. All of the am ha'aretz, all the nation of the land will be to this truma, la nasi bi Yisrael, for the nasi, for the leader, for the prince amongst the Jews. So this means that all the Amharets, all the people of the land, which means all the people, will be involved in this truma, which means in the tithing and the amounts that we mentioned in the previous few psukim, all the people are going to have to be involved in this for the nasi.
Now, before Jewish people,
the Jewish people, yes. Okay. And before we explain for the nasi, what that means, let's focus on the words kol ha'am ha'aretz, okay, all the nation of the land. The term Amharets. Am Ha'aretz is found several places in Chumash, nation of the land. In the Gemara, Am Ha'aretz is used as a negative term. It's shortened as, in the plural, Amaratzim. And Am Ha'aretz essentially means someone who is ignorant of the law and has no interest in finding out what it is. A Jew who is ignorant of the law and isn't interested in trying to find out what it is called an Am Ha'aretz. We're not talking about someone like in America today who grew up with no idea of what Judaism is, but someone who grew up in a religious lifestyle and is expected therefore to study and know what the laws are. We're all expected, men and women are expected to know the halachos, to know the Jewish law, to know what we're supposed to do, what we're not supposed to do. We're all expected to know that and to study that and to seek out what the laws are. But unfortunately, there are Jews who don't bother. Say, you know, I'll just do whatever I think is right or wrong, and they go about life that way. Are they terrible people? No. But are they likely doing things wrong? Yes. Because as we know, the laws are intricate. And if you're not going to put your mind to knowing what they are, a person will stumble and will make mistakes. So they are called in the Gemara's term Amaratzim and Am Haaretz. It means someone who is who's not involved in knowing what the Torah says. It's a negative term. An Am Haaretz is given special rules in the Gemara, which means, for example, an Am Haaretz is assumed to be tameh, to be impure. In we don't keep the rules of tahara and tumah today, of purity and impurity, except for the cases of taharas hamishpacha, of family purity. Other than that, we don't keep it today because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. But when they did have a Beis HaMikdash, and it was necessary to know who was pure and who was impure, and Am Haaretz was always assumed to be impure because they weren't careful. So if you're not careful, you become impure.
But how did you know if someone wasn't Am Haaretz or not?
It was actually a category. The Gemara, the Mishnah lists what it takes to remove the title of Am Haaretz from oneself, and instead to get the title of Chaver. Chaver means friend, which means a person who is being careful with the laws. So there are criteria.
Mostly for men or men and women?
Men and women. Besides assumed to be impure, and Am Haaretz also was assumed to take liberties with certain types of rules. For example, when it comes to the rules of Shemitah, of the seventh year, produce, an Am Haaretz is assumed to be taking liberties that he shouldn't be taking. And when it comes to the rules of taking off Truma and Maaser, of tithing, an Am Haaretz is assumed to be taking liberties that he should not be taking. And therefore, there are rules that govern how you deal with the produce that an Am Haaretz has. So that's in a negative context. On the other hand, the Torah also uses Am Haaretz in a positive context. The Am Haaretz, nation of the land, is sometimes a reference to all the Jewish people. And as Rashi explains in Chumash, it means the nation for whom the land was created, meaning the Jewish people, the nation for whom the world was created, or, another interpretation, the nation who will eventually inherit the land of Israel. Haaretz, the nation of the land of Israel. So it can be used both ways. Here, in this context, it's being used in the positive, the nation that for whom the world was created, or the nation that is going to get Eretz Yisrael, they will be involved in this Truma. La Nasi bi Yisrael, for the Nasi amongst Yisrael. Now, who is the Nasi? Who is the prince? So before we translate that, let's read the next Pasuk, Yud Zayin, 17. Ve'al HaNasi yeh, and on the Nasi will be, meaning it will be his responsibility, Ha'olos ve'amincha, the totally burnt offerings, the flower offerings, ve'hanesech, and the libations, ba'chagim uvechadashim uvashabasos, on the holidays, on the Rosh Chodeshes, and on Shabbos, b'chol mo'adei beis Yisrael, all the meetings of the house of Israel, hu ya'aseh sachatas ve'samincha, he will do the sin offerings and the meal offerings, v'esa'ola v'esa'shlamim, the burnt offerings and the peace offerings, v'chaper be'ad beis Yisrael, to atone on behalf of the Jewish people. So who is this Nasi?
And
this, okay, so it is a machlokas, it's a dispute. You see, in the Chumash, we find the word Nasi to mean the prince, like the Nisim, which are in this week's Parsha, Parsha's Bamidbar, which are mentioned that each Shevet, each one of the tribes, had a Nasi, had a leader of their tribe. He was the head of the tribe. Reuven had a head of a tribe, Shimon had a head of the tribe, etc. And you find the word Nasi referring to the king, as in the Sa'ir Nasi in Parshas Vayikra. The Torah discusses some special, there's a general sin offering, which is what by any typical person does a sin, and then there are special ones. There's a special one for the Kohen Gadol. There's a special one for the Sanhedrin, if they make a mistake and cause people to sin. Then there's a special one for the Nasi, which is referring to the king. If the king sins, that's different than a typical person. He has to bring a special type of carbon, a special type of sacrifice. So the word Nasi there means king or prince. That's in the Chumash. On the other hand, over here in this context where it's dealing with the karbonos, it sounds like it's not. It's got to be talking about someone who can offer the sacrifices. Well, a king is not allowed to do that. A king can't bring a karbon chatas. He can't actually deal with it with the blood and all that. He can't do that. Okay. Only a kohen can. So therefore,
kohen get a little kohen.
Well, any kohen could do it, but in this context, since it uses the word nasi, so those who want to suggest this means the kohen say it is the kohen gadol, like you suggested before, right? Because it's the nasi of the kohanim, the prince of the kohanim, who would be the kohen gadol. That is one interpretation. In which case, these psukim and the subsequent psukim are going to be talking about this kohen gadol actually being involved in the karban itself, because he's able to do that. Others say no, nasi here means king, like it always does. So then how could he offer the karbanos? The answer would be, it doesn't mean he actually offers them. He's responsible to make sure that they are offered.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Kohen Gadol is ultimately under the jurisdiction of the king. The king is in charge of the entire system in Judaism. And therefore everybody, even the Sanhedrin, even the Kohen Gadol, is ultimately a subject of the king, even though he's expected not to meddle in Kohen's affairs, and he's expected not to meddle in the Sanhedrin if he himself is not a Talmud Chacham, but it is his responsibility to make sure everybody's doing their job correctly. So if you learn that this means the king, then it would mean that it's his responsibility to make sure all this gets taken care of. Yes?
When King David made the mistake of counting us, did he have to do that also?
Did he have to bring the offer? That is not a sin for which a karban is brought.
That was a big thing.
I know, we got punished for it very badly. But that is not a sin. There are only certain types of sins that a sacrifice is brought for. There's not, a sacrifice doesn't work for every single type of sin.
Okay.
So that one would not have had a carbon, right. Right. Okay, well, I have to end with this, the next point I'm going to make, which is, it's interesting to note that here we have the word nasi, which in the Chumash means king, but here it might mean Kohen Gadol, while in the Chumash, the word Mashiach, the anointed one, refers to the Kohen Gadol. HaKohen HaMashiach.
Where is that?
In the Chumash, it's throughout the Chumash, particularly Parshas Vayikra, but other places as well. So there, the Kohen Gadol is called the Anointed One. When we say Mashiach, we of course mean the King, Melech HaMashiach.
Mm-hmm.
So you see that the terms, the titles, seem to cross between Kohen and King.
Mm-hmm.
Now you'll find Mashiach or Nasi, and sometimes they can be interchanged of who they refer to. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. It's an interesting observation. Okay, so next time, and I'm sorry we're ending early tonight, but next time we will begin from Mirz Hashem from Pasuk Yurches 8:18. Bear in mind that next Wednesday we will not be having class because it will be Shavuos. So we'll meet again in 2 Wednesdays, Mirz Hashem, regular time 8 to 9.
Thank you.
Thank you.